well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. A crazy weekend. We will be following the continued investigation into the assassination of a Minnesota lawmaker, the attempted assassination of another, which I'm sure is going to have implications as far as gun control goes in the state of Minnesota and perhaps beyond as well. But we have some good news to talk about today, and we covered this last week at BearingArms.com. In fact, John Petrolino, one of our contributors there, wrote about the decision by the borough of Englishtown, New Jersey, to rebate about three-quarters of the state's $200 fee to apply to exercise your right to bear arms lawfully. Cost $200. And the borough of Englishtown says, you know what, we're going to give $150 of that back to residents. The way this is structured in New Jersey, it's weird. $50 of that $200 fee goes to the state, then the $150 goes to the municipality. But as you will hear from Englishtown Mayor Daniel Francisco, there's nothing requiring these towns to hang on to that money. And Englishtown, the first in the state to say, you know what, We don't want this money because we think it's unconstitutional to charge an arm and a leg to exercise a Second Amendment right. So our residents are going to get that money back. This is big. It really is. And hopefully just the start of a movement across the Garden State to reduce these egregious fees and return money to gun owners who are, again, trying to exercise a fundamental civil right. Great conversation with the mayor there of Englishtown. Take a look and a listen. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for coming on the program. It is good to talk to you, sir.
Awesome. Great to talk to you again, Cam. It's been a long time.
It has been. And listen, congratulations. This is really big, not just for the borough of Englishtown, but I think for the state of New Jersey and, frankly, for the Second Amendment community nationwide. This resolution that was passed last week rebating 75% of the fee that it costs to apply for a concealed carry license in New Jersey, residents of Englishtown, they're going to get $150 of that back thanks to the efforts of you and the city council, right?
Yeah, this is a bit of a romantic story. The Revolutionary War's pivotal battle was the Battle of Monmouth. And the Battle of Monmouth took place in the land between what two current municipalities called Manalapan and Freehold. The Redcoats were actually in the downtown of Freehold Borough, which is the county seat of Monmouth County. And Englishtown is actually wholly within Manalapan. And the Continental Army was at the famous Village Inn, this historical building that the soldiers and a lot of weary travels were quartered in. So, you know, George Washington was in our small half square mile borough. And in a way, in the way that that battle and the soldiers marching from Englishtown to the battlefield turned the Revolutionary War, I really do think Englishtown is now going to play a revolutionary role in overturning, hopefully with future case law, our tyrannical gun laws and getting rid voluntarily of our municipal portion of our 2C58-4 carry fees is an excellent start. And we hope we can replicate this across the state.
Absolutely. So just for a little bit of background for people who don't live in New Jersey, the way this is set up, it's $200 to apply for a carry permit. $50 of that goes to the state, right? And then $150 goes to the municipality where the person is applying?
Yeah. So prior to the Bruin decision, there was a de facto carry ban in New Jersey. We had the justifiable need clause,
right,
which was wholly similar to the Niceboro case. And I was actually the plaintiff in federal court in a case called Francisco v. Cook, where we were fighting that out of the federal court in New Jersey. So prior to Bruin, it was a $50 charge that went to the state and $0 that went to the municipality. The municipality got nothing. And largely, the legislature and the police unions didn't care because in practice, nobody got one, right? You had maybe one, maybe two people in your town that would be an armored car driver would satisfy this obtuse justifiable need clause. So once our case was, you know, proliferating through the federal courts and ultimately Bruin destroyed justifiable need, Our legislature, they're not, these people, these statists, they're not dumb. They're very tactical. They're very intelligent. They said, look, we don't want all these peons getting carry permits. Let's just preempt this decision by eliminating the ability to carry everywhere by via sensitive places designation, and let's quadruple the cost. And instead of increasing what we give to the state, we'll sell it to the municipalities as we're going to put 150 bucks in your coffers with every applicant. Now, in big towns, 100,000, 200,000 people, that could be a boon. You know, it could be tens of thousands of dollars of revenue, which no politician's going to scoff at. So it was very intelligent of them to do that. Now, my case, the Francisco V. Cook case, we were put in a stay posture during Bruin because the cases were similar. I can give you some background on that, on how my case was delayed, I think almost intentionally.
Okay.
But I received a court order in August of 2022 after the Bruin decision, but prior to our carry killer bill, as it's colloquially called, where the judge, you're going to love this because people outside New Jersey don't understand that the Republicans are our own enemies here in this state. It's both sides that fight against our gun rights. The judge who heard me in Superior Court, which is our county court, was our former Republican Party chair and our former sheriff of our county. He put a court order on me that not only placed restrictions via 2C58-4, but transport restrictions under 39-6 that essentially made it impossible for me to carry, even though he gave me a carry permit. Long story short, we'll just keep it at that. Then the legislature took my court order. My court order, because I was the first person to get it in the county that was of my federal case, and they mirrored the terms precisely into the state bill. So the carry killer bill, which is now in, you know, the third district being challenged in federal court, that was modeled off of my permit, off of my court order. So they never ceased their onslaught on our freedoms. And this was a small way in my little dominion, in my little world, where I can at least bring relief to my residents and hopefully, you know, replicate that and grow it past our borders.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second, because I know that it's been, less than a week, obviously, since this resolution was adopted. Have you heard from other mayors? Have you heard from city council members in other towns and communities across New Jersey saying, hey, can we take a look at your resolution? We want to do the same thing here.
My phone has not stopped ringing, not only from other representatives. I'm friendly with other mayors, other councilmen, people that I grew up with and went to Rutgers University here in New Jersey who are now councilmen. And they're all asking, how can we do this? Now, I think the appetite for the amount of towns that will be willing to do it up front will probably be modest. I think maybe by the end of the year, we might have a couple dozen out of the 500 and change municipalities that we have. But rest assured, even just before we came on the air, I got a text from an attorney friend of mine, and I want to thank him as well, Jonathan Cohen, who is our borough attorney. He's the one who helped me draft this. He's a person who's been a great help in creating the legal basis for this. He actually did structure this in a very intelligent way because it both protects us and protects our residents. There's no some people were upset with us that we didn't make constitutional arguments in our resolution, which is 2025-101. But we did it intentionally because then the attorney general can come after us. And we're purposely, you know, siloing him out of this conversation. The state cannot get mad at the borough of Englishtown because we are accepting, per 2C58-4, the required $150 municipal fee. But there's nothing in state law that says we cannot give money back to residents. So we're shielding ourselves from scrutiny from the state. I'm making the political argument. I'm delivering the rhetoric along with the allies we have in the movement. And there have been many that I'll talk about. And at the same time, now we can proliferate this. So to answer your question, yes, there are other people asking. I won't name the towns because I want them to do it before we, you know, crow about it. But I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 2 weeks you see at least five or so that jump into the fray.
That would be fantastic. And again, I mean, as you mentioned, these towns that are doing this willingly, that's maybe the first step, right? But if gun owners in, the 475 other communities that aren't going to do this willingly can now point to what you're doing in Englishtown and what other communities are doing and saying, hey, why aren't you doing this for us too? Right? Look at what these other communities are doing. Look at what they're doing in Englishtown. Why do you want my $150? When the residents of these other towns are getting their money back from their local government. And again, even though your resolution doesn't talk about this from a constitutional perspective, there's nothing preventing gun owners, there's nothing preventing as you say, that you and other politicians making the political case as to why this fee is unconstitutional, but why it is good government and good governance to give this money back to the people.
Yes, and they have no excuse because prior to December of 2022, there was
Right.
zero revenue. So they can't build this argument that, oh, well, we needed this $25,000. It was paying for the parks or the cops, or there is no background for them to fall upon. So unless they look their constituents in the face and say, no, I want to continue fleecing you as I have for the last 2 or so years for these permit fees. Oh, and here's the more egregious angle. If you look at 2C58-3, that's what governs our firearm purchaser identification cards, our permits to purchase a handgun. Think about the posture of this. To get a license to carry a handgun, you must first have gotten a firearms purchaser identification card, which allows you to buy ammunition and long arms. And then you must have applied for a permit to purchase a handgun, which has its own individual background check that's identical to the carry and to the FPIC check. So from a policing perspective, it's an erroneous argument to say, well, this is a safety issue. No, if it really was that you needed all this time to investigate the candidate that's applying, you would have done it already twice prior to them doing the third one. And if the statists were logical, at least from a constitutional perspective, they would have inflated the cost in reverse order, right? Or deflated the cost. They
Right.
would have made the most expensive permit the first one because that one requires the most due diligence, the most labor, the most background check. They go and call other municipalities you've lived in, other jurisdictions. They go through domestic violence databases, mental health databases, and criminal databases. Well, that was already done at step one, and that permit costs 20 something dollars. Why are you fleecing me on the third check of the same person for 150 more? It makes no sense. The only thing they're doing is making sure you weren't a prohibited person since the last application. So it's silly.
So, which again, I mean, brings us back to what the Supreme Court said in Bruin, not only striking down these justifiable need laws, but noting that even, shall issue laws, they say, can be abusive, can violate our Second Amendment rights if they result in things like lengthy wait times or exorbitant fees. As you say, if it costs $200, it used to cost $50 back when nobody could get a permit. All of a sudden, now it costs $200 for what is essentially a duplicative check that's already been done. I mean, I got to ask you, Mr. Mayor, does that not sound exorbitant to you?
I mean, to me, it's clear as day. And the case I made on the dais and the case that I think will eventually be made in the courts is the way to illustrate things to your enemies is analogy, right? And I just looked at the First Amendment. This is pretty simple. First Amendment protects five things. And one of those was the very thing that my constituents and constituents from outside my borough were doing right in front of me before I made my testimony, which is petitioning their government for a redress of their grievances. And there were people telling me about things they didn't like in our town, which is their right to do. And there were people encouraging what we were doing. There were people that were against this measure, right? And no one asked them to go through a background check and pay a $150 fee to receive a permit for them to then have the pleasure to be able to yell at me. That's absurd. And I don't think any constitutional scholar would argue otherwise. And we could keep making analogies throughout all of our natural rights that are protected in the Bill of Rights. But obviously you don't need one to go to church. You don't need one to refuse searches. You don't need one to remain silent when accused of a crime. This is pretty simple. You don't need to be a lawyer to understand that this is a discriminatory practice with an exorbitant fee, and it's couched in Supreme Court cases from 100 years ago up until the Bruin decision, where Clarence Thomas very clearly said that exorbitant fees, he anticipated that this would happen. This is the genius of Clarence Thomas. He said, and this don't take this decision to mean that you can now go charge fees for rights. He literally wrote that in his opinion. So I think he was, it's an excellent opinion. I think it's clear. And as we all know in the movement, the Bruin decision was going to be the catalyst of a lot of change. And this is the state's death throes, right? They are lashing out after Bruin because they know they're going to lose. And so they're doing whatever unconstitutional measure they can to try to restrict us. And I think ultimately it will fail with all of our collective efforts.
The number of concealed carry licenses has grown exponentially since Bruin, but do you think that these fees are still having a chilling effect on the number of people, like artificially suppressing the number of permits that are issued in the state of New Jersey right now?
It does. It might not be directly proportional or linear, but it does. And people do, It's the fee in conjunction with everything else, because the process to get a carry permit in New Jersey is still pretty onerous. You have to go take a course. You have to pass a written test. You have to go through four references. You have to submit a barrage of notarized paperwork, and then you have to take a shooting practical. By the way, when I took the shooting practical prior to the interference of the state legislature, because there was no prescription. Here's the crazy part. There was no prescription in 2C58-4 prior to the Bruin decision for what type of shooting practical you had to take. So my chief at that time contacted the county prosecutor. Now imagine the unconstitutionality of this at its face. The county courts are the ones that ultimately in 2C58-4 prior to Bruin adjudicated my permit. It was your chief, and then the county court. Imagine the I don't want to say corruption, but it's literally what it is. Your police department now calling the adjudicant of your rights to make up the requirement that's extra legal and not in the statute that now myself, the applicant, has to do to then go in front of them just for them to reject me anyway, right? So they made me shoot the state police practical, which is way more difficult than the current test. And I would venture to say that the average gun owner, the failure rate would easily be above 90%, easily, right? Because everyone, you know, that's rushed thinks that shooting a handgun is very simple and easy, and it's not. So, look, the test now is much more simple. It's much more accessible to the average shooter, but the fee absolutely plays a part in it. If there's people talking about not being able to fill their gas tank at gas prices in New Jersey, that's less than $150, right? So, of course, it plays a chilling effect in people's minds. If they're having financial troubles, feeding their family and putting gas in their car is going to come way above a carry permit. And we all know that to be the case. So it absolutely does have a chilling effect on certain communities.
Well, and again, I mean, and as you say, add that to the list of gun-free zones where people are not legally allowed to carry. There are going to be some people who say, well, it's not worth the expense because I can't carry throughout the course of my daily routine. So why am I going to pay $200 to get a piece of paper that really doesn't work for me, right? Because I still can't exercise my rights. So you're right. I mean, this is a, it's not like this was just, one law that was passed in response to Bruin. This was a whole of government attack on the right to keep and bear arms when the courts basically forced the state of New Jersey to recognize that it is a right because it's not a right in the state constitution. So that was always their dodge, right? Well, it's a privilege before Heller, and then now they still, I think, treat it like it is a privilege. I think that's the status quo in New Jersey, and it's thanks to groups like. I mean, you've got some great state level groups there. The New Jersey Firearms Owner Syndicate, the Coalition of New Jersey Gun Owners, Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs. You've got some fantastic activists. I won't name them all, but I gotta say, I am thoroughly impressed with the Second Amendment community in New Jersey. I think which really punches above its weight a lot of times, and I think this is a perfect example of that.
I've been involved in the Jersey movement for 15 years with a bunch of different people. And these groups have faced different iterations. But ultimately, I said this in my Project Veritas days, but pressure creates diamonds, right? You get the most valuable thing out of the worst, most inhospitable environment. And I've always said that about the gun movement in New Jersey. We are ground zero. We are the most inhospitable environment for your natural rights. And that calls on us to give us our best against the state, right? We have to get creative. We have to get think of new, fresh angles. And honestly, the battle in New Jersey is just as much cultural as it is judicial or political. That's why we've done great work with Alexander Rubin back in the day, 10 years ago. We were going around shooting videos showing the police department telling the truth when your politicians were lying about what the cops were saying. This is the type of stuff that to a neutral or to someone who is being told rhetoric on Facebook or on the media, when they hear it come out of the mouths of, when the candor comes out of the mouths of the target that is in charge of our rights, that you can't convolute that, right? You know that's the truth. So we need all types of activism at all levels. I'm proud to be involved in this movement. I've been giving speeches at these groups for years, and now, in my capacity in a small town as mayor, I'm beyond proud to be the catalyst that's going to hopefully eventually be the seminal point that overturns these fees. I'm very excited for it.
All right, so what happens now that this resolution has passed? I mean, when is this now? Is this policy now in effect? Can people who are applying for their concealed carry license now, can they ask for that rebate once they've paid their fee? How does this work?
Sure. So I batted this around with the attorney. This policy is effective as of the vote, as
Okay.
of it passing. And I asked for it to be backdated to the first of the year. And the reason is, one, I wanted to capture as many people as possible to be able to achieve their rebate. And from an accounting perspective, retroactive financial maneuvers are very tricky in government because you have to go to all levels of the state. So the best we could do without arousing too much attention from regulatory authorities was to backdate it to the 1st of January of 2025.
Okay.
So anyone in my borough is welcome to come and ask for that. All they have to do is show the receipt that they got when they made the payment. And our CFO will cut them a check made out to themselves, to the applicant. And that's it. It's a very, very simple process.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Well, listen, again, I cannot thank you enough for spearheading this, and I do hope that this is really is the tip of the spear and that we see more of this to come. You say within the next couple of weeks, you think we'll see maybe a half dozen other communities that take this step, right?
I'm telling you that just this morning, I've been texting with a mayor and a councilman in two towns that want to do it. My very, very good friend, John Petrolino, we talk every day. And now my newer good friend, Joe Laporto, who actually came and testified at our meeting. I'm very thankful to both of them. Petrolino's talking to everyone in this world. So he knows everybody, very good friend. He is telling me about certain municipalities that are interested in doing this. Actually, someone in my borough, I won't name who, just called me this morning saying a town contacted my office asking for the language from our resolution. So there's even anonymous parties asking about this who I don't even know. So I think it's going to spread. Give it a week or two, because meetings in New Jersey and some towns are monthly, sometimes they're bi-monthly.
Yeah.
I think by the end of the year, you'll have a few dozen. And at that point, our friends in the legal world will have a lot of, pardon the pun, ammunition to work with for our battle.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I'd love to have you back on in a couple of weeks just to do an update to see how things are going both there in Englishtown and around the state, if you're welcome to
I'd love to, Cam. It's great to catch up with you again after 12 years, and I appreciate all the work you do.
Absolutely. Well, hey, listen, I definitely appreciate all the work that you're doing as well. Mayor Daniel Francisco there in Englishtown Borough. Thank you so much for your time and thanks for all of your work.
Thank you, sir.
My thanks once again to Mayor Francisco for joining us on the program. By the way, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Paul Vallone, head of Grassroots North Carolina. Constitutional carry has passed out of the state legislature. And so far, it has not been vetoed by Governor Josh Stein. He is expected to veto this bill. I would eat this hat if he allows the bill to come into law. But I suspect he's hanging on to the bill for as long as possible so that any veto override attempt, the window of opportunity there is as small as possible for Republican lawmakers. But again, we'll talk about that with Paul Vallone from Grassroots North Carolina here on Tuesday's Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Right now, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story. Our good deed of the day and our recidivist report will start there with a case at a Massachusetts Concord homeless camp shooting suspect arrested has prior convictions, including a stabbing in Laconia. This I said Massachusetts, by the way. This is a Concord, New Hampshire. Trenton McDonald, age 28, arrested on Friday night by the police in Farmington, New Hampshire, as well as a SWAT team from Stafford and Belton counties, a U.S. Marshal Service as well involved in this arrest. Charged with armed robbery, first-degree assault, two second-degree assault charges, reckless conduct, felonious use of a firearm, felon in possession of a dangerous weapon, armed career criminal, and criminal threatening charges, all of which, by the way, are felonies in New Hampshire. McDonald is accused of shooting another man at a homeless camp underneath a bridge in Concord earlier this month. It's back on June the 7th, about 7:30 in the morning. Officers sent to that camp for a report of a shooting. A 30-year-old man shot in the back, taken to a Concord hospital by fire and rescue teams with serious and life-threatening injuries. The suspect fled the scene with two accomplices, according to police, including another man and a woman. Woman reportedly flashed a, quote, Uzi-style firearm during the incident. Officers searched for the trio, but no arrests were made at the time. Now, McDonald is in custody, taken to the Merrimack County Jail, held on preventative detention. The alleged accomplices are not yet in custody. But as the Concord Patch notes, McDonald, no stranger to police, criminal history dates back nearly a decade. In December of 2015, McDonald and two other teens were involved in what was described at the time as a brutal home invasion. He was charged with burglary, armed robbery, criminal threatening and robbery, and receiving stolen property after an incident in Andover, which was dismissed about 5 months later. In July of 2016, McDonald pleaded guilty to the robbery charges. He got a 1.5 to 3 year sentence that was suspended for 5 years and a 12 month sentence. But he was given 212 days of time served and 3 years probation. All the other charges were null prost. During the past 8 years, the paper says, he has been convicted of assault by a prisoner, assault by an inmate, theft, driving under the influence, violation of probation, several drug charges, arrested several times in Concord as well. He was accused of being a felon in possession of a dangerous weapon and criminal threatening in October of 2016 after an incident in Laconia, where he was accused of threatening his parents, which also led to a probation violation accusation. In December of that year, he pleaded guilty and once again got a 1.5 to 3 year sentence that was suspended, this time for 6 years, and a 12-month sentence with 2 years of probation after that. In August of 2017, there was an alleged probation violation. Another one in October of 2017. He was also accused of acts prohibited in Laconia in November of 2017. 2 months later, he pleaded guilty to the probation violation. He received a 2 to 4 year prison sentence. He was given 29 days of time served. Pleaded guilty to a drug charge. Also received a 2 to 4 year prison sentence and a $620 fine. But both of those sentences were suspended for 5 years. Yeah, I know. March of 2018, he got he pleaded guilty to another probation violation. Got another 2 to 4 year prison sentence. But by January of 2021, he was already back out on the streets. He was then accused of first-degree assault with a deadly weapon, felon in possession of a dangerous weapon after another incident in Laconia. He was accused of stabbing a man. 10 months later, he pleaded guilty to both charges. He got a 3 to 6 year sentence, got credit for 270 days of time served, and he had another 3.5 year to 7 year sentence that was suspended for 7 years. That was in January of 2021. Right? 3 to 6 year sentence. April of 2022, he applied for work release. Apparently that was turned down. But in December of 2022, so less than 2 years into that 3 year sentence, he was granted work release. So here you have a guy who has pretty much been in constant trouble with the law for the past decade. Plenty of opportunities to put this guy behind bars for a significant period of time. And time again, the criminal justice system in the state of New Hampshire has given him a slap on the wrist, at best. In many cases, they've simply placed him on probation and sent him on his merry way after a suspended sentence. And again, you could maybe make the case that, oh, well, listen, he's a first-time offender, you know, let's give this guy a chance. When you're getting probation or a deferred sentence for your third, fourth, fifth conviction, I mean, there's something broken there, right? And unfortunately, that broken system, again, has led to Trenton McDonald being out on the streets, where he is now, again, accused of a litany of charges, including armed robbery, first-degree assault, and felon in possession of a dangerous weapon. Now, on to today's armed citizen story. This from, just want to make sure, San Antonio, Texas. Over the weekend, a homeowner got into a shootout with an alleged burglar in his home. This was early Saturday morning, according to San Antonio police, about 3:20 Saturday morning. According to the police there in San Antonio, a couple sleeping in their home. Wife woke up her husband saying, "Honey, I hear a noise." So husband went to go investigate. He said that he found a man who was, quote, glaring at him in one of the rooms of the home. That's when the homeowner shot the suspect several times, causing them to flee. As the suspect jumped out of a window and then made it out into the yard outside, he shot back at the homeowner, striking the residence, but not striking the building, but not the residence inside. No injuries reported. The suspect was not located. Although if he was actually shot several times, as News 4 San Antonio reports, my guess is that he will probably show up at a local hospital if he is not already. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing, and thankfully able to defend themselves, because this has also got an armed citizen aspect to it. Man shot and killed after attacking a Good Samaritan in Mississippi. The headline there from WLBT in Mississippi, Dateline Taylorsville. According to the Taylorsville Police Chief Gabe Horn, it was shortly after midnight on Saturday when a driver stopped to help somebody who was stopped on the side of the road, looked to, you know, be having car trouble. But as the Good Samaritan got out of their car, it turns out this guy tried to carjack him, which led to a struggle. During the altercation, WLBT reports the Good Samaritan shot and killed the alleged stranded motorist. Police say that no charges have been filed so far. The case still under investigation. But at this point, it would appear to be a clear-cut case of self-defense. You know, you're doing what you can to help out somebody in need, and all of a sudden they attack you. Yeah, you've got the right to protect and defend yourself. Now, it's not known at this point whether this guy was truly stranded or whether this was just a setup from the get-go. We have seen some instances, and I inexplicable to me, where people, you know, they really do need help. Their car really has broken down. Somebody pulls over to help them, and all of a sudden that person gets assaulted. I don't know if that was one of those cases or if this really was a planned carjacking from the get-go. Maybe there was an accomplice waiting in the bushes. We don't know. But hopefully we'll learn more information. But again, at this point, it sure seems like this is, again, a case of self-defense as well as a case of somebody trying to do the right thing. All right, that has got to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow for a Tuesday edition with Paul Vallone from Grassroots NC. Again, talking about the prospects for constitutional carry. We've got other news from around these states, though, at BearingArms.com, including an update on the proposed gun ban bill in Rhode Island. Good news out of the legislative session in Louisiana, which wrapped up a couple of days ago. And, of course, always the latest legal news. There is just a ton of it happening these days. So be sure to go to BearingArms.com, check it out. We've also got a big sale going on right now on our VIP, VIP Gold, and VIP Platinum memberships, where you can take 74% off, which is a huge, huge savings. So I would encourage you to take advantage of that and to help support the independent pro-segment of journalism that we're doing. Have a great rest of your Monday, as good as Mondays can be. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe.